Welcome to the Alcohol Debate Podcast. I'm your host, Tabin Ahmed, and I'm so thrilled you're here. If you're confused by seemingly contradictory information about alcohol, or you want to understand what's behind the explosion in alcohol-free drinks on the market, then this is the podcast for you. The alcohol debate isn't limited to our individual choices. It runs right through society at large. I'll be chatting with a wide range of experts to help separate myth from reality as we examine what booze does for us and what it does to us. So sit back and let's get stuck into the alcohol debate together. Hello and welcome. Today, the topic that I want to discuss is D, E and I, which stands for diversity, equity and inclusion. And I'll explain in a minute what we mean by those. But DE&I, as anybody in business will tell you, it's not just a nice to have. It can actually be a legal issue. And it's certainly a moral issue. And it's about being a decent human being, really. It's also very, very good for productivity. It's good for brands and it's good for corporate reputation. It actually makes up part of an organization's ESG strategy. Sorry, even more acronyms. ESG stands for Environmental, Social and Governance Policies. And basically, having robust D, E and I policies show that an organization really takes its social responsibilities seriously. And as we'll be talking about today, alcohol can play a really strong role in D, E and I. And is often the reason why some people's practices are really very poor. And it's often a case of just unconscious bias, people just not really stopping and thinking, or even being aware. So what do we mean by D, E and I? As I said, it stands for diversity, equity and inclusion. And these are different, but they're kind of interconnected concepts. There are lots and lots of ways in which we human beings are different from each other. That can include our age, race, ethnicity, our ability or disability, our gender and gender identity, how our brain works, whether we're neurodiverse or not, our religion, our culture, our sexual orientation, our socioeconomic status, even our marital status. These all are areas where we can see discrimination cropping up. So diversity is about who is represented in a group and whether there's any conscious or unconscious bias that puts some people at a disadvantage. So diversity is about who is represented in a group and whether there's any conscious or unconscious bias that puts some people at a disadvantage. Equity essentially means fairness, and equity policies, the purpose of them is to promote justice, fairness and impartiality. And the idea is that the policies should identify and remove the barriers that mean that some groups are prevented from fully participating in society or from getting certain jobs or working in certain industries. It's really about making sure that somebody's identity, their defining characteristics, can't be used to predict what opportunities they will get or the outcome of their working lives. It's really important to know that equity is not actually the same thing as equality. There is a subtle difference. So equality assumes that everybody should be treated exactly the same. But equity actually takes into consideration somebody's unique circumstances and it adjusts the way they're treated, so that the end result is equal. Recently, I listened to a podcast from McKinsey's, and there was a guy called Bill Schanginger. I think I pronounced that right, Schanginger. And he explained the difference between these two by pointing out that if McKinsey's were to treat all interns the same and paid them the same, that would be equality. But if they were to pay them all nothing, get them to do their internships for nothing, that would still be equality, but it would definitely not be equitable. because what would happen was that the only people who would be able to get onto an internship would be people whose parents were rich enough to bankroll them through a period of earning nothing. So you can see there the difference between equality and equity. And equity is really what we're talking about here. Even more important when it comes to alcohol is inclusion. Now, inclusion is about how we build a culture where everybody feels welcome. It's about actively inviting every person and group to contribute and participate. So you get an inclusive, welcoming environment which supports and kind of embraces differences, showing respect to everyone. Respect's a really, really important word in this. We need to respect other people's differences and what they want to do. And inclusive work environments are the ones where there aren't barriers, where there isn't discrimination, and there's no intolerance of people for being different to others. Human beings have an innate, inbuilt desire to belong. We all want to belong. And if we feel that we don't belong, it's incredibly uncomfortable. So you may be wondering where alcohol fits in with all of this. Well, in my mind, it does come up in diversity and equity, but it's really in the area of inclusion that alcohol can really, really prove to be a serious issue, especially when it links back to race or culture or religion. Let's have a think about the reasons why somebody might not drink, or why they might choose to drink just very moderately and very infrequently. The example that probably springs to mind for most people is for Muslims, because alcohol is strictly forbidden for Muslims. And when I was digging into this, I thought it was really interesting. The Quran gives six principal reasons for forbidding alcohol. The first is that alcohol is incompatible with prayer. Now, that one, I guess for me personally, not being somebody who's a very sort of frequent churchgoer, I can see that it is, but it's not particularly something that would strike me. But all of the other reasons really, really did resonate with me. They say it's because it's addictive. Tick, for sure. That it clouds the intellect. Absolutely, we know that. It sets a bad example and sends the wrong message to children. Absolutely. It impairs our memory. Yep, everybody who's ever woken up thinking, oh my goodness, what did I say or do last night? We know that one. It impairs our memory. And finally, the Quran says it can lead to crime. And that's definitely true. Ask any policeman. They'll be able to confirm that one for you. So these are all pretty good reasons for staying away from alcohol in my book. Not unique to being a Muslim. Makes sense for all of us. People who don't want to drink could well be because they're Muslim, but there are other reasons as well. It could be somebody like me who's had a problem with alcohol in the past. Now, in my case, I'm very open about that, very public about it, but lots of people aren't. And there is, I know, lots of shame and stigma around. I wish it weren't so. But for lots of people, they may have addressed their problem with alcohol, but they don't want other people to know that they ever had one. So they just don't want it to become a topic of conversation at all. Then you can think of people who may be trying to get pregnant or who are in the early stages of pregnancy. And interestingly, the best advice is that in order to maximise chances of conception and a healthy pregnancy, it's not just women who should refrain from alcohol. Men are advised to restrict their alcohol consumption and ideally abstain from alcohol altogether in the 3 months prior to conception. So male or female, their own fertility and family planning may be an issue. Could just be that somebody wants to be on top form the following day, not dulled by a hangover. Perfectly legitimate. They may be concerned about the health risks associated with drinking alcohol, or have medical reasons for avoiding it. Interestingly, when people are on antidepressants, if you read the patient information leaflet, it will advise that people don't drink alcohol, because alcohol actually is counteracting the effect of the antidepressants, so it's making it a little bit pointless taking them. And there are all sorts of other reasons. Many antibiotics are sort of contraindicated by alcohol. In other words, you shouldn't drink alcohol whilst taking them. But there are all sorts of reasons, and it's personal stuff. People don't want to discuss their medical history. It could just be that somebody doesn't want to be disinhibited and kind of lose their judgment with particular groups of people. Maybe they just don't like being with drunk people. Several of the young women I interviewed when I was doing research for my book told me about how uncomfortable they felt with male colleagues and clients who had been drinking. And they talked about how perfectly nice people became quite predatory and made unwanted advances when they'd been drinking. And those young women felt that they needed to be on their guard. And one of the component parts of being on their guard was not to drink alcohol. So there are plenty of reasons for not drinking. And the thing is, they're personal. Nobody should ever feel like they have to drink to fit in, whether that's in their social lives or their working lives. And they shouldn't feel they have to explain why they're not drinking either. You may be aware that last year the ECB, England and Wales Cricket Board, published a report called Holding Up a Mirror to Cricket. And that report was prompted by a racism row at Yorkshire Cricket Club. And I have to say that the report made for very uncomfortable reading. It highlighted that, and this is a direct quote, having a beer as part of the usual post-match routine and social events involving alcohol, these things are part of many clubs' culture. And they also said, another direct quote, a heavy drinking culture excludes a significant number of people. That's the very opposite of inclusion, isn't it? They're specifically saying that the heavy drinking culture excludes people. And the report cites clear evidence that drinking is often seen as kind of a necessary part of fitting in. And of course, that makes somebody who doesn't want to drink feel unwelcome. And the emphasis here is on the word feel, because it's how people are made to feel that matters. If the idea is to bond over a beer, and the exercise actually leads to some people feeling like kind of marginalised and excluded, then in my view, that's a bonding exercise that's failed. It has not achieved its objective if you've got some people feeling left out, that they don't belong. Now, the context for this report being commissioned was accusations of racism by an Asian player, Azeem Rafiq. And it's certainly true, it seems, that racial and religious reasons lie behind many people associated with cricket not wanting to drink. There are more Asians and Muslims involved in cricket than in many other walks of life. And there have been several Muslims in England teams over the years. And there was kind of quite a shocking thing that happened in 2019. Well, it wasn't. It was a surprise. England won the Cricket World Cup, which was wonderful. But if you watch footage of the cup presentation and the celebrations that followed it, you'll see that two Muslim players, Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid, actually left the team celebrations when their teammates began celebrating by spraying champagne. And the press reported that the routine presence of alcohol at these celebrations meant that Moeen Ali kind of backed away from his team. He distanced himself from the team. Now, anybody who's ever worked with teams knows that what you want to do is bring them together, not divide them. And yet in this case, alcohol was a divisive factor, so much so that two players left the rostrum as the champagne was being sprayed. They did not want to be part of that. It does look, hopefully, as though some lessons are being learned. Because a few years after that, that happened in 2019, and in 2022, Australia won the Ashes, and their captain, Pat Cummins, actually put a stop to the team's boozy celebrations, and he set the champagne out of sight. He kind of hid it so that one of their players, who's called Usman Khawaja, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, but he is a Muslim, and it meant that he could join in the celebrations. Otherwise, he was looking as though he was going to absent himself. And the captain noticed it, put the champagne to one side, hid it, and meant that Usman could be part of the celebrations. So, step in the right direction, but there's still a long way to go. The champagne is still likely to feature in many a celebration. But these cases of people feeling excluded because they don't want to drink alcohol are not just limited to the world of sport. If you think about your own social life, every time somebody's challenged by their friends for either not coming out or for not drinking, they're being made to feel that they're an outsider, that they don't belong in the group. And even more so when they're questioned about why they're not drinking, or worse still, being told that they're boring for not drinking. That's really hurtful. And of course, it can be very difficult for people in the workplace too. There are still a lot of industries where alcohol is just completely part of the culture. And that can take the form of client entertaining. There's this kind of unwritten rule that if the client wants to drink, you should do so too. It's kind of your job to make them comfortable, even if you're anything but comfortable yourself. And in corporate life, there are those occasions when the boss invites everybody out for a few drinks after work, and they can actually be really tricky. A good boss is always going to make sure that people know it's absolutely fine to drink something non-alcoholic. But there still are far too many situations where people feel pressurised to drink, particularly the more junior people. The best, most progressive employers are already addressing this, and they're coming up with ways for staff to socialise without alcohol being involved. And those employers are really, really reaping the benefits. They're able to attract really good people, to retain them. They enjoy an enhanced reputation as an employer, and they benefit through increased productivity. So the more that we can think about how we bond without alcohol being involved, the better. So this whole topic of DE&I is something that I look at in a lot of detail in my book, Bottling Up Trouble, which is going to be published in September. And I will be revisiting it in a few weeks' time with a very special guest. It's such an important subject. And I hope you found the opening of the debate, at least, interesting today. And I look forward to you joining me next time on the alcohol debate. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Alcohol Debate podcast, where we set out to separate myth from reality as we explore what alcohol does for us and what it does to us as individuals and as a society. Why we love booze, and why there are times when we really don't love it at all. If you would like to know more about today's topic, please head for my website, winetowatercoaching.com, where you'll find further information and worksheets for the tips and tactics that I share. That's winetowatercoaching.com, and the two is T-O, winetowatercoaching.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn. Just search for Wine to Water Coaching. If you've enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe or follow wherever you get your podcasts. And please do rate it and review it, as it will help other people find the show and get answers to their questions on the truth about booze. And I hope you'll join me again soon for another episode of the Alcohol Debate podcast.